Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It is Season 6, Episode, 62. We got Daniel McCullers on the hit list today. And the Steelers are getting ready to take on the Denver Broncos. And we really appreciate Troy Rank being with us on Wednesday. If you didn't get it, you look, we have a lot of great guests on, and that's one of the things Dave and I really pride ourselves on in terms of who we get to talk about the opposing team. And I had some interaction with Troy when he covered the Rockies, and he moved over to the Broncos seamlessly for the Denver Post, and he was great. So if you didn't get to hear that, go check that out, Wednesday's podcast. But, Dave, here we go. It's really an entertaining game, and we really highlighted Steelers offense against Seattle's defense when they played a few weeks ago. This is, I think, the two elite units in the league getting together here in week 15 of the NFL season. This is a marquee matchup, not so much for the other two units in the game, but really the Steelers offense against Denver's defense is about as good as it gets in football, and I'm really jazzed up to watch this one.
Yeah, it will be, and I think Todd Haley kind of hit on this during his talk with the media on Thursday, talking about, you know, this will be the biggest test that the Steelers offense probably will have all season. I mean, if you can score against this defense, you know, I don't think you're going to see a better defense unless the Steelers make it to the Super Bowl and play the Carolina Panthers. You know, I really think you know, this is going to be a measuring stick of sorts. And you know, they just got done playing a Bengals defense that you know, is solid as well too. And it, you know, we talked several times about, or I did, thinking that Ben would, despite all, you know, all things, still try to throw the football down the field against the Bengals, and he did. It was more of a controlled, rhythmic passing game for the most part. I think he only went deep past 15 yards five times in that game, completed two, and I think he had one intercepted in that. Now, obviously, that was a better showing than the last time that Ben played when, you know, he had three interceptions there. So it's going to be interesting to watch more than anything on this talking about today. Friday, David, is this Broncos injury report. 22 names listed. 22 names. I had you choked up.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, I did see it. Yeah, I know who didn't practice yesterday. I saw that. I did not see the fact that there were 22 on it.
Yeah, 22, and you figure that a roster has 53. I don't know. Should we start some math here? You know, that's nearly half of a 53-man roster on injury report. Now, obviously, a lot of these guys listed on your injury report are going to play and going to be okay for Sunday. But, you know, a lot of nicked-up people. And the prime person, I think, to watch here on Friday when their final injury report comes out is the status of safety T.J. Ward. He has missed the last two practices with an ankle injury. I don't believe he played last week against the Oakland Raiders, and I think even Troy highlighted, you know, they had to have I'm drawing a blank. Shiloh, what was it? The safety fill in and was absolutely miserable. So I think that could play a big part in this. And obviously the biggest matchups are going to be how Alejandro Villanueva and Marcus Gilbert, you know, control those great pass rushers of Denver on the outside. So I think, once again, Denver defends the deep ball well, just like the Cincinnati Bengals had. So you could see a more controlled, rhythmic passing game, much, you know, like we saw against the Bengals last weekend.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Dave, because that is certainly one angle on it. And then the other is that they like to bring T.J. Ward down in the box against the run game. They like to play single high safety. They're going to play man, which, you know, that's Steelers. That's what they're looking for. And Seattle did it. You know, they took Antonio Brown out of the game, but it's tough to take everybody out of the game. But when you look at Seattle, you talk about Richard Sherman. When you look at Denver, you talk about Chris Harris, I think the most underrated player in the game. He and Tlaib are having unbelievable seasons. And then they bring in their first-round pick last year, Roby. So they can go man with three really good corners. They have corners like nobody in the league. And I think if they do go man, particularly in these early downs with T.J. Ward down in the box, you might see the Steelers try to take shots. I think that's the most interesting thing, which way the Steelers are going to go against his defense. And then the other thing to watch here is whether Harris is following Antonio Brown around the field. This is one of those games where, I hate to say it for people who aren't going to be at the game, and you're not going to be at the game, but now I get to go to these games at home, and, you know, TV does such an extraordinary job today, and the analysts are good, and you know, everything's good, and watching the TV is quite a great experience. And then the All-22, obviously, you get to see everything. But one thing that I'll be watching when I go is just looking at how the Broncos line up at the line of scrimmage as Ben brings the offense to the line. Are they going to show their formation? Are they going to shift into stuff with, 5 seconds left on the play clock? How do they show it to Ben? Are they going to have the corners up close on the receivers? All those types of things. I think in this game, that kind of chess match, this is really kind of the fun, one of the really fun games to watch to see how it all evolves in that respect.
And when they open up, and when you even look at their opening defensive lineman against the Raiders, they played a base formation, but they only had one true safety on the field in Stewart. They chose to play that base with three corners. And I think that's obviously because of not having T.J. Ward for that game. And let's face it, safeties are on the field. Primarily, they're glorified linebackers that can cover in the back end there. So if you have some smaller bodies, which, Tlaib is by no means a smaller body, but perhaps you can attack that a little bit better with the run. So, here's another thing. Wade Phillips runs a 3-4 defense, and he runs a one-gap defensive front a lot of times as well, too. So
Dave, just talking about Wade, historically Wade's known as a defensive genius with good reason, but he's not trying to oftentimes he can, but he's not oftentimes trying to out-scheme you. What he does with this defense is go ahead, give it to us. Here's our guys.
Well, yeah, but he will scheme you because in the fact that he wants to line up to get you in certain situations where you're forced to go man on man with a certain two players.
Exactly. And that's what I mean is he has the personnel to go tell you, go ahead.
Right. He wants to get himself in situations where you're having to go against Von Miller who's the other one over there? I'm drawing a blank.
DeMarcus Ware.
Yeah, DeMarcus Ware, most definitely. And look, they can rotate those guys out. Shaq Barrett, who I talked about a lot about with Troy the other day. There's really no letdown, in my opinion, when they rotate out their guys, and they should get Trevathan back, inside guy this week as well, too. So I guess what I'm kind of getting at is the fact that they do run a somewhat similar scheme to what the Steelers do. Maybe that helps the Steelers offense with familiarity against a scheme, such as that. So, I mean, that is really the matchup to watch. However, you look at the other side of the football. If you're a Broncos fan, I think you're coming into this game wondering, man, can this Broncos offense do anything at all deep down the field against a Steelers defense that's been known to give up some explosive plays this year, to give up the deep ball. Because let's face it, Brock Osweiler, I made the comparison that he's kind of a tall Alex Smith. And when you go back and you watch that game against the Raiders last week, you kind of get that feeling. You kind of get the feeling of an offense that's rhythmic, that will put three tight ends on the field sometimes. They'll put two backs in the backfield at time. They'll run, they'll try to get you going opposite directions with some outside runs and then come back and misdirection off of that with moving Osweiler out of the pocket. very typical, you know, for people listening to this podcast, if you want to kind of get a sense, I mean, you got Gary Kubiak's the head coach and the one calling the plays over there. So all you need to do is go back to thinking about the games in the past, you know, when he was with the Ravens and, of course, with the Texans, of how that kind of, you know, the usage was offensively. They'll use those tight ends most definitely. You'll primarily see Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders out there, so there'll be some good matchups. The thing is, will the Steelers just play off all, you know, a lot of the game and kind of let Osweiler pick and choose, or will they actually get up on that line in this game and force Osweiler into situations where he does have to throw the football down the field? And that's going to be key, I think.
And this might be the game, for the first time in my life, I say playoff. This really might be the one time because, you know, Dave, you go back to that Monday night game where they beat the Patriots and Demaryius Thomas had, you know, 150 drops in that one until he made some catches at the end of the game. Finally made his first catch, it feels like, in the fourth quarter. Manny Sanders, the last two games, I think 5 catches, 37 yards. This, you know, you look at offensively at this Broncos offense, those are by far their two best players. And they're not really, in this, the way things are set up, it's not really suited to them. You know, this offense doesn't use their skills well. They don't have a great offensive line. They don't have a great quarterback. They don't have a great running back. They don't have a great tight end. They've got two, I think, elite receivers, or at least elite caliber receivers. And so, you know, this would be the game where I'd say, you know, make Brock throw it, you know, throw the 7 yard out 10 times to get down the field, take CJ Anderson away, don't get beat over the top. And if Denver, you know, has some 40 yard drives and kicks a few field goals, no big deal.
Well, I tell you what scares me the most, and it goes back to earlier on this season with the Steelers handling, being able to handle tight ends. I mean, let's face it, Owen Daniels and Vernon Davis, that's not bad.
No,
that's not a bad.
But all, you know, you'd like them more 3 years ago, but yeah, they're pedigree guys.
Yeah, and especially in that offense, we've seen Kubiak run that with the Texans. We've seen him run it in the past with the Baltimore Ravens. So that is, and look, the Steelers have gotten away with some Vernon Davis, go back to that game earlier in the season against the 49ers when he was with him. He had some drops in that game, I think, that could have maybe changed, you know, the flow, early flow of that game had he made some catches there. So if I'm Denver, you know, that's kind of how I'm trying to attack the Steelers. It's kind of similar to the Week 8 game last year against the Cleveland Browns when they were able to run those Y crosses and get those tight ends across the field against a zone type defense there. So, you know, I'm not so concerned about them stopping the run because, let's face it, the Steelers defense has done a good job at that this year, you know, stopping the run. Now, if the Steelers offense is able to come out and put some points on the board quite early and get Denver in a situation where they're having to pass, pass and give up on the run, you know, you really like things at that point. But I'm not convinced that that's going to happen. I think this has the makings to be a kind of a slow, methodical field position type of game where the Steelers are going to have to make sure they capitalize on every opportunity and every turnover that they get.
Yeah, and you know, Dave, look, we can just very simply say that's the answer to the game, turnovers. The Broncos have lost three games. They lost to Indianapolis. They lost to Kansas City. They lost to Oakland. All three games, one thing in common. The team that won, that beat them, they didn't turn the ball over at all. When they lose, you know, Denver has turned it over at times. Would they have 5 turnovers in one of these games recently? And the Steelers' defense, look, if we just go back to what we've been talking about all year, Steelers' defense has pretty much been the same team every week, give up a bunch of yards, and then just do they get the turnovers or not? And when they don't get the turnovers, you might see 35 like you saw against Oakland. You might see 39 like you saw against Seattle. If you get the turnovers, you might see, you know, 10. You might see 9. I can't remember Cleveland. What was that, 30-9? You might see 9 like you saw against Cleveland. You might see what you saw against the Bengals, 20, where, you know, there was a late touchdown that really didn't make much difference. So it's a simple game for the Steelers. This is a situation where when we've talked about the quarterbacks the Steelers have played against, they haven't played against elite quarterbacks a lot of late. and they're not going to play elite quarterbacks in the next 2 weeks, although I did say, and I will say it again, that Johnny scares me that last week of the season. I would really put it – if I'm the Steelers defense, I would put this game dead square in the hands of Brock Osweiler and said, go ahead, beat us. Because I want to take the running game away. I want to worry about the outside guys. And in doing those two things, I think if I can take those two things away or at least contain the outside guys, not let them beat us over the top, then I feel really good about the Steelers' chances. And, if the Broncos get five field goals again or four field goals like they got in the first half last week, that'd be great. Just keep them out of the end zone, and if they get a couple turnovers, this is going to definitely go the Steelers' way.
Yeah, and I want Osweiler to force the ball down the field, outside over 10 yards. That's where what we want, though, and what we're going to get is probably two separate things because, the Steelers do like to play off at times. But, boy, if there was ever a time to just play play a two-deep shell and force Osweiler to put the ball in windows and drop it in the bucket in spots, I would think this one is it. And you're right. Very talented. And they'll try to counter that with Emmanuel Sanders on some of these quick slants off of some rubs. You'll see that in the Oakland game. Demaryius Thomas, outside of the drops this year, 10 catches last week against Oakland, 95 yards. To me, that's a win if you keep him under 100 yards and out of the end zone. Let him get his catches. Just make sure you wrap him up after the catch. And Keith Butler talked about that yesterday on Steelers Nation Radio with Missy Matthews, how, the tackling was a little bit better this last game, but, how many times – there were still problems, and he noted a few of them there, and that's the thing that absolutely needs to happen when you're talking about a big guy like Thomas and a good a guy like Emmanuel Sanders who's decent after the catch. You got to get those guys on the ground quickly. You have to make Brock Osweiler have 9, 10, 11, 12 play drives in this game. But more than anything, I want Osweiler. He had 51 pass attempts in that game against the Raiders, and I want him to have to beat me deep, with hopes that you can come up with an interception or two, and then it goes without saying you want to get him in as many third and long situations as you can, because he has been sacked quite a bit so far this season in the five games that he's played in.
Which team has more sacks at the end of the day? This is going to be Allie and Marcus Gilbert's biggest challenge of the year with these two guys coming off the edge. They're a ferocious team. The Steelers have gotten some sacks, and obviously, the kid Schofield, whatever it is, at right tackle for Denver, he had a nightmare, and he's obviously going to be looking to redeem himself with their kind of porous offensive line and the Steelers' okay pass rush, or the Steelers' pretty good offensive line and the Broncos' great pass rush. Who ends up with more sacks?
I'm going to say Denver in this game. I think it's something like 3-2 or something like that would be my bet. And I don't think, as long as there's no fumbles on those sacks, I think you can survive those if you're the Steelers. Here's the thing. How many times, throughout this year have we said, well, the Steelers are going up against this offensive line that's missing these players, and really outside of the game against San Diego, right? We really haven't seen them beat opposing offensive lines maybe the way that they probably should have, and especially on the left side, talking about Arthur Motes and Bud Dupree, who we're not even sure Bud Dupree is going to play in this game. Limited in practice on Thursday after not practicing on Wednesday because of a lower back injury. So, even if he suits up, how healthy is he going to be? He's made progress this year, but, he's still not where he's supposed to be. Arthur Motes, has had his moments, but still, it's not like when you line that thing up, and especially if you're Denver, you're very fearful of those two guys combined. And I think Denver comes out of this game with the most sacks. As long as we're not talking about five or six of them in this game, I think the Steelers can win if they give up three sacks in this game, as long as Ben's not turning the football over during any of them.
Yeah, I'll generally buy that. I think three.
I mean, let's face it. We don't have Khalil Mack.
Yeah, you're right. We don't have Khalil Mack. No Khalil Mack in black and gold. That's for sure. All right. Well, on that front, Dave, I opened my show yesterday with one of James Harrison's sacks against the Colts, and went into something that we talked about Wednesday about which Steelers are playing their last game at Heinz Field. And the list is potentially a relatively long list of 10 or 12 guys. Obviously, that won't be the last game for all of them. And probably if you had your druthers on a reasonable contract, you might bring all these, most of these guys back. But let's take a guess, yes or no. Let's try to take a stand here on some of these guys. And I think James Harrison is the most interesting one. James is, and I think you said it right. I went and looked again. What's he making? $1.25 million next year. He's already, I think, the fifth oldest player in the league or sixth oldest player, and he's, the oldest defensive player, second oldest. I mean, the guy's an old dude, and he's been around. And for all the things we worried about, and you and I talked a lot about it in the preseason, how should they use him? Run him till the wheels come off or put him on a pitch count so he's playing 20 plays a game? Well, the reality is he's played 40 plays a game, and he hasn't been hurt, and he's been at times effective. I don't want to – you're not going to the Pro Bowl. It's not 2008, 2010 James Harrison, but – He's been a useful guy, and the question is really for me in my mind, it's not really do you bring James back and how does it affect Jarvis Jones and et cetera, et cetera. It's if the Steelers don't go outside linebacker in the first round or the second round, edge rusher, does that mean you can use the draft pick elsewhere, whether it's the secondary, whether it's the D-line, whether it's the O-line, and you can bring him back and say, kind of say the same thing we said at the beginning of the year. He'll play 20 snaps again, and for that price, there's no real cost to it, and then you can wait a year to go again in the draft and try and find your guy. So that's kind of how I frame the question. So let me ask you two things, Dave. Do you want him back? Will he be back?
I want him back because there's no risk involved. $1.25 million is not a risk for a player like that. Now, there are drawbacks. There are risks with him in coverage, yada, yada. I just got a funny feeling that this is going to be it, David, whether it's his decision or the Steelers' decision. I just have a funny feeling that he won't be back.
You convinced me on having thought about it since we talked on Wednesday. You convinced me. You made me change my mind, and I don't do that a lot on some of these things. But I changed my mind that it'd be fine to have him back. And then it's just a question of whether the Steelers want him back. And that'll be, that's obviously their decision because it sounds like James wants to come back. And I think I kind of agree with you, but although, I've been wrong 2 years in a row now. I didn't think he'd be back this year. So I agree with all your logic. And I'm going to say the answer to me will be if the Steelers don't go edge rusher in the first two rounds, James Harrison will be back. Okay, Ramon Foster. You want him back? They don't have a replacement, right? There's not a guy to play left guard on the roster, right?
Well, I mean, depending on what you think about B.J. Finney on the practice squad.
Good point. I was thinking Chris Hubbard, but okay.
We don't know a lot about him.
Yeah, we don't know anything. I don't know. I saw him in St. Vincent. But okay, let me ask you this. So I asked Jerry Dulac this on the show yesterday. We went through some of these names. He said this is going to be Ramon's decision. Can he get more money elsewhere, and does he want to go elsewhere? So you would sign him to a 2-year, $5 million deal in a heartbeat, right?
Yes.
Yeah, me too. Okay.
And I think he'll be back in some way. I think he'll be back because, I would expect this team to still draft an interior lineman at some point during the draft.
Yeah.
But depending on the pedigree and depending on how Finney cut, there's no guarantees at left guard right now. And I know some people out there are going to say, well, you got Kelvin Beachum out there and you could probably get him back now cheaper, blah, 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 and move him to left guard. And Beachum is not a left guard, folks. He's not. I mean, he is best suited to play tackle in the National Football League. Can he give you snaps at guard in an emergency situation? Yes. Do you want him there? 16 games a season? The answer is no.
You want Cody Wallace there?
No. But let me tell you, Cody's done a hell of... Cody's by far no means perfect this year. But
did you see him pick up that blitz? Did you see him pick up that blitz in the game? You know the play I'm talking about when Perfect came shooting up there and you know almost ran him over, but he picked it up and Ben made the throw. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember the play, but
yeah, I mean he had a nice pancake block in that game. He's going to try to get out there in space for you. He's going to be late and miss blocks. He's going to give up 6 sacks a season, but. You know, for what the role that he was having to step in, he's done a tremendous job, all things considered.
Yeah, the quiet MVP. You know what I mean. He is the guy nobody's talked about, and that's great. That's the best thing that could ever happen to Cody Wallace.
And with all that said, I don't want him taking a snap at guard.
And so then, okay, let's just say Beecham. Beecham's not going to be back, right?
I'm not going to say he's not, but you would have to think that he's going to get. I mean, as long as this. You know, the timing of his knee injury was probably about perfect for him to make it back by the start of you know training camp. I think he's going to get some offers out there, David.
And it just goes back to what I was saying the other day is if you're an NFL GM, do you want to go out and sign the guy who's the smallest left tackle in the league? He's got good tape, you know he can play, but if you're choosing between guys, how much does his size? And that's the only question there is. How much does his lack of size at 6'3", 310, 315, how much does that impact your decision whether to sign him or not? Because, look, if he was 6'6", it's a no-brainer. He's, you know, it's a done deal. And so that's the only thing that I think will impact his market going forward.
Well, I mean, you know, somebody's bound to value him at least a $4 million contract, right?
Oh, I would think he gets,
even to play right tackle.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. If somebody wants him as a right tackle, you sign him up tomorrow for, you know, sign him up for 3 and 15 in a heartbeat, I think. I mean, I think you'd do that in a second.
I mean, are the Steelers going to pay him more than Marcus Gilbert makes right
now?
Which
and,
is
and,
what...
and, you know, and Marcus Gilbert's had a great season, too. And it looks, again, we want to talk about smart, you know, everybody wants to rip the front office when they make mistakes. I wasn't loving the Marcus Gilbert signing when they made it. I wasn't loving it last year, but it looks like a stroke of genius now.
Boy, the fans were just a hollering on Twitter when that happened.
I think it was fair. I wouldn't thrill with it myself.
Oh, overpay him, man. Boy, has he really gotten his not. I mean, hat tip to Mike Munchak and Marcus Gilbert because sheer fact that Marcus looks like a athletic right tackle
now. I will
now.
Tell you a story. That we were in, I was in the cafeteria with Mark Cavoli a couple of weeks ago, and somebody walked by, and I said, "Who's that?" Because look, guys, I'm not a locker room guy. I don't go in there and spend a lot of time, and I can't identify every player, you know, in a t-shirt and shorts. And I said, "Who's that?" He's like, "That's Gilbert." I'm like, "How much weight did he lose?" He's like, "He's lost 40 pounds since last year," and he looks fantastic.
He surely does. I mean, you go back and look at that old early tape of it, and that might explain why he had those ankle problems and all, you know, and wasn't lighter. He's a lot lighter on his feet now. Boy, his play sure has been fantastic. And you're right. You know, we rip, and the fan base rips the Cortez Allen, you know, signings and the Lamar Woodley contracts and all like that. But you have to look at they've got a guy underneath under contract right now at, you know, $6 million a season that, you know, you can make arguments that he's one of the top right tackles in the league right now. So back to Beecham. You know, with that way Alejandro Villanueva's playing as well, too. Yeah, I mean, if you're signing Beecham to a long-term deal, you're signing him to start, right?
Yeah, you are, and that's why I just don't think you can do it. What's Allie's contract status?
Through next season, and then I think an exclusive rights after that. So
what's he making next year? Is he making 800 or something?
No, 500 or something.
Yeah, I think that gives you the money to pay Foster if you want to do it. I think Beecham's done. I don't think he'll be a Steeler next year.
I mean, I'm sorry. Funny how things could have gone the opposite direction had they inked them up at the start of the season, right?
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
$525,000 for Alejandro Villanueva, and I think he will be after the 2006. You know, check this out. You've got him under contract this year. You got him under contract cheap next year. Assuming he's going to be an exclusive rights free agent after 2016, he has to accept the minimum after that for 1 year, and then the year after that he's a restricted free agent. So you know, you put a second round tender on him, you know, and you got him cheap again.
Yeah, so you got him for the next 3 years. So he's your guy, and you're going to go other places. So Beecham's gone.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, so next guy, Will Allen. Let's just make it easy. We talked a lot about him last time. He's gone in my book.
I've said it for the last few years. I've been wrong,
yeah.
But I'm going to say it again. This is it for him.
You know, Antoine Blake's a starter. He's the special teams guy, blah, blah, blah. I don't know who's going to pay Antoine Blake, so maybe he's back, but you're not going to pay him any money to come back.
No. I think people are going to hate this. I think he's at least back in training camp on a one-year minimum deal.
Can Sean Spence start in this league for somebody else?
Oh, man, you know, if he had never had that injury, you know, he could have been a Will outside linebacker, I think, you know, in a 4-3. I don't think anybody's going to pay him to start, David.
Yeah, you know, Jerry said, you know, he may not be back because he may see the handwriting on the wall that he doesn't have an option here. And that actually makes sense to me. Not quite a Ziggy Hood situation, but a situation where if he wants more playing time, if that's his goal, then he may go elsewhere. Will Johnson, are the Steelers going to carry Rosie Nix and Will Johnson next year? Because Rosie Nix is going to be on the team.
I have a feeling Will Johnson will be back in camp. Now, where it goes from there, I don't know.
I'm guessing Will Johnson's gone. Cam Thomas, gone, right?
Gone.
William Gay gets re-signed, right?
Oh, absolutely. I don't see how you can't.
Yeah. Okay, I think, you know, Jacoby Jones, thank you. Mike Vick, thank you. There are a couple other thank yous, I think.
Mike Thomas got a soft spot for Vic.
For both those guys, don't suggest they're coming back. They're not coming back.
Steelers
might drop.
Who? I mean, look.
I bring Gronkowski back.
And you can have Gronkowski back for the minimum for a qualified contract.
I bring him back in a second. I mean, for, you know, $800,000, $1 million, whatever, sign him up another day. He's been around the team all year long. He has stuck around. He's done it. So I don't care whether who you want to make the number the number two and who you want to make the number three, but I would feel very, you know, they had Batch and Leftwich for a while. I'd be very comfortable with Gronkowski and Landry Jones.
And I think Gronkowski's better in the room for you too, and on the sideline.
Yeah, all that stuff. So okay, so those that's your quarterback situation. Darius Hayward Bay, you know, we'll see. Sammy Coates is a good, you know, Sammy Coates' year went just like we thought it would go. I think Marte, you know, there was, I think, obviously some people want to say or hoped that it would be a Martavis Bryant type year. But the problem is Martavis Bryant came in when the Steelers didn't have a Marcus Wheaton on the team. So there's no playing time available for Sammy Coates to have had that option. And they're not really going to be a lot of playing time available next year, but he'll be the four. And then it's, you know, is DHB going to come back as a special teams guy at $1 million because – you know, who are the three guys on restricted free agent tenders this year? You had Robert Golden. You had, was it Will Johnson?
And Antoine Blake.
Yeah. So, you know, would you pay?
Well, are you going to bring Golden back?
Yes.
For sure. I signed him to
a 2-year deal. I'd say Golden to a 2-year, $3 million deal, whatever.
Man.
You're bringing him back, right?
Yeah, I would bring him back.
I think he's
you
back
could
for
have...
sure. Special teams captain. You know, sure.
Yeah, look, we never thought Ryan Mundy would get a contract somewhere after he left, and he was able to parlay that into some money.
Yeah. So it's interesting if you're at the game or watching the game, thinking about guys who were, you know, last time they stroll into Heinz Field, and obviously
here's a guy we don't talk about and haven't for a while, even though I've got posters all over the office here of him, Steve McClendon.
He's not under contract, is he?
No, he's not.
Yeah, you're gonna pay him. And McCullers is what he is. So anybody who's thinking about Big Dan being the guy, you know, over the next 3 to 5 years, it's not gonna happen. It didn't happen this year, so it's not gonna happen. And
I got blistered for suggesting that early on in his career. Now, not saying that it still can't happen, but I don't think he's progressed the way they thought.
He was a 6-round pick. It was a hope.
How many snaps do you think McCullers has played this year?
105.
Man, you are on the money today. Did you cheat?
No. I basically said 10 snaps a game, and then that's 130, and then backed it down from there. So I was going to 8.
Defensive snaps, 97. Special team snaps added on that, 107.
True. Nice. Yeah, he's just a guy. He's a, you know, you'll keep him around because he's cheap and he's on a rookie deal and he'll be the backup nose and whatever. But he's not, he ain't going to be in the Pro Bowl, or he's not going to Canton anytime. And
any chance he's your starter next year?
None. Zero.
I would agree with you.
Steve McClendon's your starter. You're gonna sign him. There's a little bit of money that we didn't talk about where that goes. so you know this roster. When we talk about it, we keep saying it. You know, I had forgotten that Spaeth was under contract. So, you know, you look at the offense. You have all your guys. You're getting Le'Veon Bell. You have your backup running back in D'Angelo Williams. You know who your top four receivers are, and then your fifth is maybe Darius Heyward-Bey. You're looking for line depth and figuring out what to do with Foster. We just gave you your three quarterbacks. You know your three tight ends. It's a done deal. The offense is a done deal. Go into the draft and just go load up on defense and get an offensive lineman and a tight end and figure it out from there. We assume Heath is back, and I don't know if you want to go first or second round tight end this year. It might be 2017 when you go first or second round tight end because, you know, Heath's going to be in the third year of his three-year deal next year. So maybe next year's the last year for Heath. Maybe next year's the last year for Lawrence Timmons. Both their contracts will come up. They're going to have to redo Timmons' contract anyway for the cap hit that he's going to take this year. But, yeah, load up on the defensive side of the ball and see if guys can win jobs.
Yeah, as a follower on Twitter asked me or suggested the other day, spend all 7 picks on secondary.
Yeah, see who wins.
Mix in a couple outside linebackers in there as well, too. I mean, theoretically, I mean, you could see this team possibly taking an interior lineman. Maybe a tackle at some point in the draft.
It's been, I wonder what the thoughts are with Mike Adams. Are they going to bring him back? You know, do you want him as a cheap third tackle? And then, you know, how good is it that we have not mentioned Doug Ligurski's name all year long? He's been on the team all year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he got a couple snaps, some kneel down snaps the other game. There, what was it, against the Colts there. But, yeah, and really we've had to mention Chris Hubbard's name very little so far this season as well, too. So I think you need to upgrade that depth.
I think I think D-line will be an early priority in the draft, and it may be D-end again, second or third round, because you need a legit backup. And LT Walton, whatever, you know, he is who he is. But if they find a third defensive end to rotate with Tuitt and Heyward, it'll – make life easier for both those guys, and that I would expect that to be an early priority.
Yeah, I mean top four rounds.
Yeah.
I mean fourth round, you can see a guy that fits this, you know, the 6'6", 305, you know, can play the 3, 4, and 5 prospect. You can see that position being in the third and fourth round for sure. Look, we don't know what Anthony Ciccolo is right now. We know Arthur Motes is just biding his time right now, and for that matter, Jarvis Jones might be biding his time, you know, as well. So, I mean, that what does that leave you when you consider you got James Harrison, 37 there? I mean, you are all your eggs right now in the Bud Dupree basket?
You got a lot of them in there. I mean, Motes will be back, Jarvis will be back. And then if you're not bringing James back, that, you know, that means you're going high again, edge rusher.
The good thing is with Jarvis is you can give him his option, his $8.5 million option after this season, and that doesn't mean a damn thing. You know what I'm saying? Because I mean, look what happened. Who was the one that just cut by the Jets recently?
Yeah, their first round pick.
Right. Well, they had given him that fifth-year option, you know.
Was it Quentin Couples?
Yes. You know, that fifth-year option is only guaranteed from injury. So, you know, he never even made it to that. Now, whoever picked him up, who was it, the Bills or the Dolphins? Was it the Dolphins that picked him up?
Yeah, claimed them all. Yeah, Dolphins, I think.
Now, they are responsible. The Dolphins are responsible for that option year being as how they claimed them off waivers.
Right.
But I mean, realistically, they're probably going to cut him, you know, other than paying him that money there. So, you know, you could go into this offseason, and, boy, the Twitter machine will be lighting up like crazy when they announce that they have given Jarvis Jones his fifth-year option. But when and if that does happen, it doesn't amount to a hill of beans, because until, you know, as he's still got to make it to the March, you know, the following March, and be on the roster then in order for that thing to become fully guaranteed. So, but I guess what I'm trying to say is, man, you need some edge rushers on this team. So you could theoretically see this team take one in the first or second round. No way this team goes corner in the first round, right?
I absolutely won't rule it out. I just, you know, I know they haven't. I know history says whatever, but if there's a guy they like there, then go get him.
But what I mean, here we are now, and assuming they make the playoffs and win a playoff game, they're going to be down there.
Well, I know, and it's interesting because if you know, nobody wants to hear about the, well, maybe they do want to hear about the early mocks, but they're, you know, they're five or six projectable first round corners here, so there'll be somebody on the board, even if they're picking, you know, 26.
I think I said it at the same time last year. They wouldn't draft a – I say it annually. They're not going to draft a cornerback in the first round. Yet by the time the draft rolled around, I mocked Kevin Johnson to him in the first round because it looked like perfect spot and he might be there on the board. I'm going to slap my hand on the wrist because, I mean – Don't let me change. Remind me that I said in December, no way the Steelers are going to – I will be shocked if this team drafts a cornerback in the first round of 2016 draft. I'll put that on record now. Now remind me of that when I start mocking a corner to them in
March.
In March.
All right, Dave, let's get to our picks. And we both rolled with the Rams last night.
Yeah, I think that was a give me money maker right there, if you ask me. And let me tell you why I went that way. Greg Williams. And Greg Williams doesn't play a snap of football. He's a defensive coordinator. I just had a feeling that, you know, with the talent that they have on that and Aaron Donald on that team, I just thought they were going to be able to confuse Jameis Winston and get pressure on him. Boy, Aaron Donald, man, what a stud that guy is.
Yeah, he's a beast.
Is he going to be a Hall of Famer?
Oh, that's a good question.
Kind of relative.
Trajectory is there right now.
Sure is, man. When he's on, man, he's moving furniture up front.
He is so quick and disruptive. I mean, you know, because of their record, he dropped out of the conversation rather early about Defensive Player of the Year. And J.J. Watt's still the guy. J.J. Watt is still J.J. Watt. But you know, Aaron Donald's right there. When they're making the Pro Bowl list. He and Geno Atkins, and you know the Steelers control both of those guys to some degree, believe it or not. But he's fun to watch. He is really, and we got some Saturday football this week.
Yeah, our defensive tackles usually, I hate to use the verb crapped on when it comes to Hall of Fame.
They're no stats. It's hard to know. You have to have watched them play.
Yeah, but he sure is fun to watch play.
Okay, so I assume Steelers fans will be rooting for the Cowboys tomorrow night. They take on the Jets. Dallas getting 3.5 at home. Ryan Fitzpatrick, the jury is in, and it was a sixth-round pick the Jets gave up to get him from Houston. And, boy, that looks like a good pick. He's been great of late. This Jets team's playing as well as anybody. You root for the Cowboys, but I'll take the Jets -3.5.
Yeah, I hard to go against. Todd Bowles has done such a great job. What a great fit he has been for the Jets. You know, they're talking about re-signing Fitzpatrick to, you know, what, $6 million a year deal possibly at the end of the season. Because, I mean, let's face it, they don't really have any. Geno Smith, I don't think, is the answer there. But Dallas just, you know, Dez Bryant's just not enough, in my opinion. Give me the Jets to win this one by a touchdown.
Game two on the board this week is Sunday, Chicago, Minnesota. Bears getting 6 in Minnesota. I don't know what to make of the Vikings or the Bears. I'm not overly impressed with either of these teams, but I'll take the Vikings.
Yeah, but Teddy shows you some signs, right? I mean, that he could be a top 10 quarterback in the league. He might already be that right now. I had to go through the list again. Chicago's put up some good fights. I just think Minnesota and Adrian Peterson are going to be too tough in this one. So give me Minnesota. I'm with you. Lay the points.
Okay, Atlanta, Jacksonville. Well, the jury's in on both these teams. Jacksonville's getting better. Atlanta, I mean, it's a good thing it's Dan Quinn's first year, because having a team roll over after seven games the way they have it, you know, 4-0 or 5-1, wherever they were, they've lost a bunch in a row, and they're going to lose this one. Jags minus -3.
Oh, man, I know better than take Matt Ryan in this one, but I'm going to. Dan's going to get him back on track for this game. I think Julio has one. I think Julio has one of those 200-yard games in this one. So give me Atlanta on the road plus the points.
Very interesting game, 1 o'clock. Houston and the Colts, you know, who knows who's going to play quarterback for either of these teams. I don't know. I'll take the Texans on the road. I mean, the Colts, they've been smoked the last 2 weeks.
Man, what a weird
thing. They can't eat you. They can't eat you. Did you hear Pagano say that? They can fire you, but they can't eat you?
What a line. I don't know which way to go on this. It smells like a sucker bet right here. Give me Indianapolis at home to win by a touchdown.
Chiefs minus -6.5. Root hard for the Ravens. Give me the Chiefs.
Yeah, I don't see it happening here. Give me Kansas City to cover.
Buffalo minus -1.5 at Washington. I really still like Buffalo, and you know, I wish they had a little bit better early part of the season. Washington's obviously been really good at home. Buffalo lost a tough one to the Eagles. I think they come around and win this one against the Redskins.
Yeah, I need to make up some ground on you, but you're picking all the sides I'm wanting here. I think Buffalo is just going to be too much in this one. Give me Rex Ryan. Lay the points on the road.
Pats are laying 14 at home against the Titans. This is kind of – there are plenty of games that the Pats don't cover, but they win comfortably. I thought the Titans would do better last week, but the Jets smoked them 30-8, and so I see more of the same. I'll lay the 14.
Man, that's a lot of points, ain't it? I know Tennessee sure can give them up, too. Man, that's a lot of points. I can't give up that many. Give me Tennessee to you know, lose by 10 in this one.
Eagles getting 3.5 at home against Arizona. If I had to do a power ranking, I'd have the Cardinals as #1 in my power ranking. I know Carolina fans would kill me for that, but give me the Cards minus -3.5.
I've had Arizona as my #1 team most of the season because of that Justin net yards per passing differential stat that I like to play with. I don't see how Philadelphia keeps this close. Carson Palmer's going to big play them to death, I have a feeling. Give me Arizona to win this one by a touchdown.
Giants getting 4 at home against the Panthers. Let's finish the undefeated season off. Give me the Giants, and I hate it. I'm going to be wrong, but give me the Giants.
Man, Carolina, just that defense in camp. Here's the big thing is Carolina could be without Jonathan Stewart in this game. That might wind up being pretty big. I think Greg Olsen's banged up. I don't think Carolina loses this one, but I think it's a field goal game. So give me Giants plus the points.
Seahawks minus -15 at Cleveland. Give me Johnny plus +15, but I'm going to be wrong on this one too.
Yeah, that's a lot of points, but I feel a lot more comfortable with the way Seattle's playing right now, both offensively and defensively. The only way this one goes wrong is if Seattle turns the football over, I would think. I mean, that's the only way I see it. I mean, this is in Seattle. They lost their running back this week. What a big blow that is, right?
Yeah, it really is.
Rawls?
Yeah, Rawls, because, boy, what a find he was. Out of Central Michigan, where'd he go? Eastern Michigan, Western Michigan? Where'd he go to college?
Oh, I'm drawing a blank on him. That sounds right. But, I mean, it's a loss. Russell Wilson should be able, and that receiving crew should be able to overcome it. So give me Seattle to lay all those points at home.
Really interesting one. Green Bay at Oakland at 4 o'clock. Packers minus -3 at Oakland. I'll give you a shot here. I'll take the Raiders and give you the Packers.
Central Michigan for Rawls. That's Antonio Brown. Where Antonio Brown went to school. We should have known that. Shame on us. What'd you take?
I took Oakland.
Man, great. at a point during this season, man, the Raiders look like they could be in this thing. Give me the Packers on the road, lay the point.
Chargers minus two at home against the Dolphins. I'll take the Dolphins. Why do they even play in this game? Play out the season.
I don't know what to think about this one. Isn't this going to be Floyd's final game? Is Floyd going to play in this game? Malcolm for the Chargers. And this could be the Chargers' final home game, right?
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be the Chargers. And how about John Clayton saying on my show on Wednesday that Oakland may transition the next 2 years in San Antonio?
The San Antonio Chargers?
San Antonio Raiders.
Oh, San Antonio Raiders. Gee, Manetti. Give me San Diego to get a win here and cover.
Okay. Bengals, Niners, Bengals minus six. Yeah, give me the Bengals, and I'll happily be wrong on this.
Something tells me San Francisco is going to jump up and bite them here. Give me San Francisco to win this one outright.
Oh, man, you're going to make a lot of people happy. But how about our listener, and I want to make sure I get the name right, there is a chance. There is a scenario. Gary sent us an email. There is a scenario where the Steelers can finish second in the AFC. And basically, if the Steelers win this week and the Niners win, and then the Broncos beat the Bengals and the Steelers win again in week 16 – and then the Steelers win, the Chargers have to beat the Broncos, and the Ravens have to beat the Bengals, and Kansas City loses a game. Yeah, it's not going to happen, but there's a scenario. And thanks to Gary for pointing that out. So that's one step along the way would be the Bengals winning that game, or the Niners winning that game. Monday night game, nobody cares. Detroit plus three at New Orleans. Give me Detroit.
Give me New Orleans. I need to make up some ground on
okay, you. Here we are. Showtime. Steelers. Minus 6.5, which is a bit of a bigger line than I would have expected. I would expect this to be 3.5 or 4. I like the Steelers. I like everything that's going on. I think this is going to be a really fun game to watch. I'm excited for it. I think the Steelers are going to win. I think they're going to run the table the rest of the way. I think they're not going to be the sixth seed. I think they're going to end up at five or, well, I think they're going to end up probably number five seed. I think they're going to win their first AFC playoff game. I think they're going to start this week, but I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk. And so give me the Steelers 23-17. And that means I'm taking the Broncos plus 6.5.
Yeah, I've got that. Look, the Broncos haven't given up 30 points all season, right? If the Steelers come out and score 30 points on offense against this Broncos defense, I don't know. I'll be impressed if they're able to do that. I don't think they're going to be able to do that. I think the Steelers will do enough to win this game. I think it's going to be closer than what a lot of people think. I have the Steelers winning this one 23-20. I keep trying to throw out there that last-minute field goal. This week is the week that it's going to happen. Last-second field goal by Chris Boswell wins it. 23-20 Steelers, and there will be much celebration.
Dave, the next show we will do, Christmas will have come and gone. So Merry Christmas, man. It's been a fun year. The Steelers get this win. It looks like we will extend, you know, at least a couple weeks into January. I think this – I mean, obviously they're not going to have clinched the spot if they win this, but – I think this will go a long way to showing who the Steelers are in the bigger picture and whether they're a really good football team. And I know nobody wants to play them. You can go win this game against this good a defensive team, and it'll say a lot. So good stuff.
So what'd you say? We're not going to do another show until Christmas.
Oh, no, right. Darn. I was thinking we won't do another Friday show.
I thought maybe Festivus or something like that.
I was thinking about Friday.
We'll be back on.
Maybe we'll do a show. Maybe we'll do a Christmas show. Maybe we'll do Friday on Friday.
Okay. Hey, I'm
up. That was bad. How about me complete brain cramp on the calendar?
I've had plenty of those.
3 days a week.
Yeah, Monday, 21st. Be there or be square. let's see here. We got a couple of emails. Our buddy Bot from Canada writes in to us every once in a while. David, hi, Daves. Don't you mean Billy? I don't want to be called White Shoes Johnson no more. Was a comment that he made. I think I made a reference to him in that last.
Oh, I got it. That was my reference.
Let's see. Carrie Fontana wrote in, says, I've been a longtime listener, even featured. Oh, he was the one that we featured an article back in 2011 called Steelers Nation, Steelers World.
This is a great question, too, by Carrie.
Yeah, go ahead. You want to finish this?
Yeah, go ahead. We'll tell him about the article.
I nearly forgot about it. Right, Peace Corps and all like that. After listening to the podcast all these years, he has one question keeps coming to his mind, and he finally decided to write it and hope that either David, Todd, you, or both can provide some insight. His question is, what does Mike Tomlin actually do during a game? It sounds like a simple question, but I truly don't know from understanding coaches' responsibilities, blah, 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 you know, delegated to Haley and Keith Butler. I often agree with David, Todd, that he mismanages the clock, so it doesn't even seem like he's actively handling that on a play-by-play base. So this is sort of like an Office Space questionnaire. You know, when they have to go upstairs and talk to the two Bobs, what exactly do you do here, Mike Tomlin?
It's a great question because the answer is he is the CEO, so he does everything and maybe a bit of nothing. I mean, he is making those clock management decisions. That is a big part of it, but. He's not making personnel decisions minute to minute. He's not calling the offensive plays, but he's hearing them called in the headset. And there are times, obviously, on the sideline when he'll be involved in the discussion. He's not calling the defense. That's coming from Jerry Olsavsky calling personnel, and then Keith calling the personnel. Jerry Olsavsky calling the personnel that the opposing team puts on the field in terms of what kind of groupings they have. And then Keith will call the defensive formation out. So Mike hears this all through the headset. He is CEOing it all. He's responsible for all of it. But as any good CEO, allow your people, hire good people and allow them to do their job. So that's what he does. And then, you know, he's standing there and having conversations with Keith and with Todd during the game. But it's a great question because you say, if you took him out of the equation, could everything else still function? Well, if he does his job perfectly, yes. If all his people know what they're doing, you could take him out of the equation. And everything should still go well. But, you know, the clock stuff, and I don't mean to belittle any of this. That is, you know, he's going to make those decisions about how to manage things. Going for two, you know, when to be calling timeouts, you know, at the end of the half. Late game situations, when to go for it on fourth down, those types of things. He's making all those decisions for sure.
Now you know what this means now before we run out of time here. This either after the game on Sunday or during the Tuesday press conference, you have to phrase this question to Mike Tomlin exactly the way I'm going to give it to you. Mike, what exactly do you?
I have to tell you, Carrie. When Carrie sent the email, I read it and I laughed out loud because it's a question.
You got it, and it is a great question, and I want you to ask it Tuesday. Mike, what exactly do you do during a game? That's $5, but you better write it down because you don't phrase
it. Honest to God, if I could do it without laughing, I would consider doing it. The problem is I'm going to look like such an ass and such an idiot.
Oh, you look like an ass on this show.
Every week anyway, right?
Everybody already knows.
Mike, I got a question for you, and I'm passing this on from a loyal listener. What the hell do you do
during a game? You have to. Now you'll insult him if you say just what do you do. everybody knows it's David Todd asking those time management questions. Maybe you'll throw it for a loop. Say, Mike, this isn't a time management question.
And it's not about Pouncey either.
Yeah. His head might explode. To ask him, Mike, what exactly do you do during a game? I dare $5, David. $5.
Every listener gives me $5. It'll be maybe my salary, so I might do it.
There you go. Listeners, can we get some pledges from you?
Twitter. I want just put at Terrible Podcast $5, and then you're committed.
There you go. Put some kind of hashtag in there. Hashtag
Ask Tomlin.
Ask Tomlin. There you go.
Hashtag Ask Tomlin.
Let's see how many people actually listen and translate
100
this.
People do it. I'm not going to commit to it, but I will give it serious consideration.
Chicken, I'd do it.
Yeah, right.
You know I'd do it in a heartbeat. Oh, boy.
One last thing. Vontaze Burfict got fined, and, boy, not only did he get fined, the NFL came down big. He's got about $70,000 in fines on three things that happened in this game. So there was a lot of justifiable complaints that the league didn't find him. Well, I don't know if they changed their mind, but they did, and they came down hard.
Absolutely. Boy, we got to get out of here. You can follow me on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. Follow David, at David M. Todd. Follow the show, at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. You know where to donate, at SteelersDepot.com. David, talk to you on Monday.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.